Welcome to the Bulwark Podcast. It is January 20th, 2021, the final day of Donald Trump's presidency. By the time you are listening to this, my guess is that Donald Trump is off into his sulking exile, a defeated, disgraced, twice impeached president who will be the first of the, pariah ex-presidencies. And who better to celebrate this particular moment, the non-peaceful transfer of power? Because it normally would be, we'd be talking about the peaceful transfer of power, but I think that I don't think that brand applies. Our own Tim Miller, who got up early on the West Coast to watch the president make his walk of shame to Marine One. So good morning, Tim.
Good morning, Charlie. I've already cried this morning. In case you just wondered my state of affairs, been angry, been joyous, had tears. It's 7:06 a.m. Pacific time, so that's just going to be one of those kind of days.
There have been no tears here, just so you know. But I do think that, I mean, look, we need to be very sober about this. This is a really important day. We've worked for this for a very, very long time. So, and I do think that it is important to mark this day, one of the most iconic moments of our democracy, with the seriousness and the solemnity that it deserves. Oh my! But so
just if any of your listeners want to just kind of go with that vibe and take a pause here. I also played this morning something really sober and enjoyable, which was the song "F You" by Lily Allen, which has the lyrics: "We hate what you do, and we hate your whole crew. So please don't stay in touch." And then we get to spell our four favorite letters. So it's a nice little way to get your morning going as well.
Okay, so I told Jim to hold this to the end, but since we're in this kind of mood here, okay. I did wake up and I was humming a tune. I was humming this tune. I'm guessing you did as well. You know, I'm sorry. We've waited a very, very long time for this morning. And of course, I can just hear all the anti-Trump people saying, "Oh, are you guys going to be bitter? Aren't you going to be gracious? Isn't this a moment for grace? I thought you wanted to heal." Okay, wait. Having just witnessed the most graceless departure from the White House in modern American political history, please, you folks that sat on the sidelines, you know, and for the last 4 years, you know, why don't you sit this one out? So
I know it's painful for them, Charlie. It's hard. I've already had a couple of them lashing out at me on Twitter this morning. And one Newsmax guy made fun of my hair, and it's got to be hard, you know.
Okay,
it's got
to be particularly a Newsmax guy is making fun of your Newsmax.
Yeah, it's tough. Yeah, Newsmax anchor. Yeah, he told me I was sanctimonious, and he made fun of my midlife crisis hair. I may have midlife crisis hair. That may be right, but I feel like it was a little bit of a lash out for somebody that feels bad on the inside. You know, I mean, these are people.
This must be a hard day for them.
Yeah. I mean, the pure MAGAs, they're sad. You know, I saw Don Jr. was crying this morning. That was hard to see. But it must be particularly painful for the people that deep in their little Jiminy Cricket conscience knew he was bad and were kind of against him in private and, you know, whispered that to their Democratic friends, but just couldn't quite get there ever publicly because of, you know, their job or partisanship or because the libs are terrible or because, you know, Charlie Sykes is annoying on MSNBC or whatever the reason was.
True.
And it must be hard for them because they can't really enjoy it with the same pure enjoyment that we have today. And they want to take us down a peg. So,
well, no, and they're angry because, of course, there's nothing worse than being right too soon. Right. I mean, do you remember the stories of, you know, the folks who accused people who broke away from, say, communism for being, this is the actual phrase in history, premature anti-Stalinism. Okay, Stalin turned out to be a monster, but you broke too early. You should have waited until it was fashionable. You should have waited till Lillian Hellman told you it was okay. So the folks are sitting around at National Review and the Washington Examiner saying, okay, so he's disgraced. He was really, really horrible. But at least we didn't suffer from the Trump derangement syndrome of, I don't know, Bill Kristol and Tim Miller. Charlie's
at least, night. I mean, come on, these crazy never Trumpers who even they went so far, Charlie, they went so far as to even attack our great United States senators for going along with the coup that led to their near death at the Capitol. I mean, you know, these anti never Trumper guys wanted to criticize those senators and take them out too, because, you know, on January 5th, the night before the insurrection, they were all supporting pro coup candidates. You know, that is now that's just a step too far. So it's really, you guys are about, it's tough for them. I get it. You gotta grasp onto something on a day like today. And I'm not, you know, we can't let them grasp onto our branches.
Well, you know, the great forgetting is about to begin, which is we have to just forget all the bad stuff. I mean, the Wall Street Journal is trying to say, you know, please don't let these final weeks define the presidency because it's all that good stuff. Here's the reality check. The stuff that's happened over the last several weeks and months will define this presidency. Nobody 50 years from now is going to remember what the GDP was, what the unemployment rate was. Nobody is going to be saying, God, Donald Trump, what he's most remembered for is regulatory reform. He's going to be remembered for two things, the human carnage of the pandemic and for his role in the insurrection and his graceless departure from the White House and the fact that he was impeached twice. I mean, that's it. You know...
Honestly. Yeah, and I would go actually flip it. JVL had a great triad about this. It was the before that folks should read. That was I don't know if I'd go to exactly right, because I would flip. You know, he said that it was the pandemic that will be the most remembered. I mean, our current president this morning in his farewell speech, which I know we'll get to relish in here in a minute, got the wrong year of the last pandemic. You know, so I'm not even sure. You know, I truly believe that 100 when we're talking 100 years from now. That you know, presuming our democracy survives, presuming that we, you know, press forward and don't have a, you know, we don't slide back into this kind of soft authoritarianism that the Trumpists have pushed, I think that they look back on this and see this, his second impeachment, the insurrection of the Capitol, the fact that he did not want to pass the peaceful transition of power. That I think is the moment that people look back on. And I think that the pandemic is then mentioned as well, and his irresponsibility in handling it. The fact that he got it, you know, is a little nugget that, you know, that you'd put in a sixth grade history textbook. But I this is it. And, you know, to your point, that Wall Street Journal editorial about how we don't want to tarnish the legacy of Betsy DeVos or whatever. And it's, you know, Steve Mnuchin. It's just like, hey, nobody's going to remember these people.
And nobody looks at Hungary.
And it's also just absurd. It's like nobody looks at Hungary and is like, you know, Viktor Orban, bad guy, but his, you know, his minister of labor is really doing a great job. You know, that's just not how this stuff works. If you miss that badly on the big stuff.
Yeah, this is almost, actually, let me take out the word. This is really in the, but he made the trains run on time territory.
Yeah, right.
I mean, this really really is. And what JVL did that I think was really good was to point out that most presidents are remembered for very specific things. You know, George W. Bush is going to be remembered for 9/11, the war in Iraq, right? I mean, Bill Clinton for impeachment. George H.W. Bush, first Iraq war. There's always one sentence, Ronald Reagan bringing down the Soviet Union. Jimmy Carter, malaise.
Poor George, just a quick aside, poor George H.W. Bush. I mean, he reunited Europe. And if Donald Trump's people want to be sad, they're not going to get their judges mentioned or whatever. I mean, Bobby Bush reunited frickin' Europe. He didn't even get that mentioned in JVL's newsletter. That made me sad. It also brings home the point.
But Supreme Court justices... So this is here's a Trivial Pursuit question. Antonin Scalia, William Rehnquist, Thurgood Marshall, Whizzer White. Who appointed them? Really quick. I mean, you'd have to be deep into the Federalist Society to be able to answer those questions. Donald Trump's legacy, I think, is pretty much established. And frankly, it's also being sealed today. I really was struck. I'm getting ahead of myself for a moment. But, you know, the one thing that Donald Trump is somewhat good at is sort of, you know, choreographing himself, you know, his celebration of self at Andrews Air Force Base and all that stuff, you know, the rallies and everything. But the way he choreographed his departure from the White House, he looked small, he looked diminished, he looked like a disgraced president. And so his legacy is still being determined right now by the way he is exiting. And before we get into all of this, our colleague Barry Rubin has come up with a video that I think puts in context the departure of President Trump and what a dramatic betrayal of American traditions, and not just dusty old traditions, but fundamental norms about the transition of power. And so you can find this online. You do this for Republicans for the Rule of Law. But let's just play the audio of this, just kind of a flashback to the way other presidents have handled days like today.
5 days from now, the world will witness the vitality of American democracy. The presidency will pass to a successor chosen by you, the American people.
This is the most corrupt election in the history, maybe of the world.
Hillary, Chelsea, and I join all Americans in wishing our very best to the next president, George W. Bush.
You will have an illegitimate president, and we can't let that happen.
I committed to President-elect Trump that my administration would ensure the smoothest possible transition.
You will have a president who was voted on by a bunch of stupid people who lost all of these things.
In the eyes of many in the world, this every four-year ceremony we accept as normal is nothing less than a miracle.
Because we're going to have somebody in there that should not be in there, and our country will be destroyed, and we're not going to stand for that.
And here we are. So,
that's
Tim Miller.
Make you want to throw up, isn't it, Charlie?
Well, it also just reminds you of how dramatic the events of the last couple of weeks were. I mean, think about the last 2 weeks. 2 weeks ago today, we had the assault on the Capitol with the design of stopping the counting of the electoral votes. It is so off the charts that I'm not sure that even critics have fully grasped the magnitude of it or the enormity of it. A week ago today, Donald Trump became the first president in American history who was impeached twice. And today, he's departed and Joe Biden is being sworn in. So you were telling me that you had an emotional reaction this morning. Just to talk. So yeah, what were you watching and how did you react?
I was watching him leave after I kind of laughed when YMCA came on. And then I just sort of watched him walk up the stairs to the plane to leave the final time. And I started actually crying, like real tears, not getting misty. And I sort of heaved. And I don't even know why. You know, it was kind of this just climate. It's just this finish, this sort of release, right? I mean, it was a little bit of happiness and a little bit of sadness of how we got here. I mean, I still feel this wistfulness, like listening to that video. You know, it's like what I think we've learned is that I thought everybody else was like this, and apparently not. But I really bought all that bullshit, Charlie. I really bought it too. Like the Reagan totally stuff did. And the Bush and Obama, you know, even when Obama won and I had voted for McCain, worked for McCain, you know, I felt emotional at that transition of power. What a great moment that was for our country, the first black president, and how lovely it was to have, you know, the Bushes up there and their pains to the American transition of power. All of that resonated deep within me. And as kind of a nerdy, you know, government, like, you know, politics loving kid, all that stuff moved me as a young person. And so a big part of all this, why it's so painful is to just see all of the people that I thought were with me on that, were experiencing those emotions, just totally dismiss the way that Donald Trump has tarnished and trampled on it and minimize it as if it's not a big deal at all. Or in some cases to actively support it and to cheer it on. And that's why it's been so nice to have this community and, you know, Ever Trump and the Bulwark and all of you, because it's like, I'm like grabbing onto Charlie's shoulders. Like there's somebody else who is with me this is like a real loss. And so I just think it was this combination of emotions of this sort of joy and relief of getting rid of him, but still, you know, a real sadness about the fact that we
that it happened
got here.
Yeah, that it happened, and millions of Americans were willing to fight to keep him in office. I mean, I think that that's the flip back and forth. How did we get here? What was the damage? But I also think that I'm working on this, is that this is a day to be happy, to celebrate. We can go back to the recriminations later, although we did a little bit of recriminations
later. A little bit.
But I mean, listen, let's enjoy this. But I have to say that I was really struck by the contrast last night when Joe Biden, Kamala Harris, and their families held that ceremony for the COVID, the people who had died from COVID. It was an extraordinary moment that sort of illustrated the dramatic split screen in terms of empathy, compassion, and decency between these two men. Now, look, there's going to be a lot of things I'm going to disagree with that Joe Biden has done. In fact, I disagree with some things he's doing now. But having said that, it is such a dramatic transition. And I was watching that, and I'm sure this is not an original thought, but what happened last night was something that Donald Trump not only never did, but that he was incapable of doing, and that we have had 400,000 Americans die. My neighbor, who lives right across the street from me here in Mequon, Wisconsin, just died yesterday from COVID. Oh. And yet we have a president of the United States who gave up on it, who has minimized it, who has attacked people who want to take it seriously. And this is very much his legacy. And then you have Joe Biden coming in, and he didn't say a lot, but you could tell this is a man who actually has a level of humanity that we have been missing for the last 4 years. It was really, you know what I'm saying? It is really strange. I don't want to fall into, gushing about Joe Biden, because I mean, he's going to be a flawed politician, as are all politicians. But in this category, that was a remarkable moment, I thought.
Yeah, and Todd, I 100% agree with everything you just said. But for me, it was this morning that hit me a little more, when they were walking out of church, you know. And again, this is maybe my Catholic school kid getting brought up within my emotions. But again, this Joe Biden, that is important to him. You know, his faith is important to him. He was attacked for this by people on the right throughout the campaign. The president attacked him, said that he was going to get rid of God. Mm-hmm. And he had that bipartisan gathering at St. Matthew's in D.C. this morning. And just sort of watching everybody walk out of church solemnly, but with pride. You know, this is something that that is part of Joe Biden, that he is earnest about, that you can sense when he's talking about his faith. You can sense when he's talking about, you know, the Irish Catholic, making Irish Catholic references that only us Catholic kids get sometimes. And again, the contrast between somebody who used that, who used religion as a cudgel only, you know, who used it as a prop to tear down. It's just every step of the way, every set piece is a contrast.
Well, this is such an important point, because this has become sort of central to much of Trump world, is that this is all about God and religion and about Christianity. And you look at Joe Biden, well, this man is a Christian. He really is, whether you like this or not. He you know, so the whole narrative of how the Democrats hate God and they hate America, what are you talking about? What do you mean? I think this whole campaign, and I'm
just really quick, Charlie, I just want to say this for the Catholic school kids out there. Actually, Joe Biden is a Catholic. Okay. He's so earnest about this that, like, you know, politicians, this is the difference. This is what I'm saying. Politicians would say, I'm a Christian, right? Yeah, because you want to appeal to the broadest number of people, right? Joe Biden isn't that. He's a Catholic. And he's been going to church every Sunday and on all the holy days of obligation since like 1941, right? And that is part of the contrast. Anyway, sorry to interrupt.
No, you're absolutely right. And you can't understand who he is without understanding that. I mean, that is so much part of his identity. So one of the things that this whole last 4 years has really reinforced, and I'm still wrestling with it, and I need to write this out to understand what I actually think. And I think you're in the same category, that this has clarified what we think is important. right? That we used to think that certain things were important. We used to think the tax rates were important, or the regulatory system was important, or your position on abortion was the most important thing about you. And I think that what's been clarified is that maybe other things are more important. And I wrestle with this because I do, and I understand a lot of people who are militantly pro-life are willing to set aside every other thing as long as Donald Trump was anti-abortion, they would support anything. Kids in cages, the cruelty, the policies on immigration, the corruption, the payoff of porn stars, as long as they were, and I understand how people can become one-issue voters. But I think that we also have to work through what was really fundamentally important: democratic values, liberal democracy, the rule of law, compassion, empathy, decency, a due consideration for truth. All of those things now seem so much more important than the things that I think you and I once thought really defined what we really cared about in politics a few years ago. Do you agree?
Yeah, in some of those ways, the differences seem stupid.
You
know, back and I'm like, you know, Solyndra, I was really upset about. And, that was a bad idea, giving money to Solyndra. But it's kind of like, who cares? I wrestle with this too, Charlie. Here's why. Because sometimes I wonder, am I putting too much emphasis on things that are ephemeral, right? And this is what I think our critics would say, right? Mm-hmm. Am I putting too much emphasis on these things that are maybe part of this American idea that are not tangible, right? The rule of law, some of these things, these things that you've said, pluralism, decency, humanity, like that isn't, you can't always draw a direct line from, believing in these fundamental underlying American values that we were all taught and thought this country stood for, and that made person X's life better. Right. And that's a criticism that comes from sometimes the left, populist people on the left who say that we put too much emphasis on all this stuff and not on whatever checks for, $2,000 checks. But here I just, as much as I've wrestled with that, like where I land on this today is I think that what we saw on January 6th was just the most fundamental encapsulation of the fact that this instinct is right, right? That mm-hmm. these overarching principles and values are more important than our disagreements over specific policy things.
Yeah, they were the abstractions. It became very, very real on January 6th.
Yeah, right. Because it comes to life. It sort of bore out this thesis that you cannot just continue to lie to people and divide people and gaslight people and demean people and not expect that something bad happens as a result of that. And I think that obviously the COVID response was a sign of that, but the insurrection at the Capitol made it extremely, extremely real. And I don't want to lose that memory and like let that soften as we get back into, real and important disagreements over policy matters that'll happen over the next four years, but that will still be for me secondary. I still want to remind myself to keep them secondary to what we've learned. We're much more important fissures that I didn't even think. I wrote about this in the Goodbye to All That article. I didn't even realize we disagree. I thought everybody agreed with me on pluralism and on the rule of law. I didn't realize that actually 80% of my party disagreed with me on that stuff.
Yeah, that's exactly where I was here. So I've spent a lot of time lately, reading up on former presidents to try to get some, sense of the where Donald Trump is going to finish. There's no doubt in my mind, by the way, spoiler alert, that he's the worst president in American history. But there are a lot of other pretty horrible presidents. I mean, there are some horrible people who have been president of the United States. Buchanan was a terrible president, probably a pretty awful human being, not as awful a human being as Andrew Johnson, who was both a horrible president and a really deplorable human being. You had others, who were, failures, who lied. I know that, Susan Glasser writes, Wilson botched the handling of the pandemic. True. LBJ and Nixon lied to the American public a lot. Right? Yeah. Clinton, Andrew Johnson were impeached. Other presidents were outright bigots and philanderers. And then she comes down to it. But none before Trump was all of those things at once. It is all of it. It is the complete package. It is whatever. We take the worst elements of the worst presidents and bundle them together, and you have what we just had.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not a historian, and I'm not going to play one on this podcast. So James Buchanan could have been also extremely, and Andrew Johnson. I mean, obviously, the move away from Reconstruction was just disastrous in every possible imaginable sense, and reverberated through the decades. You know, and so how can we look right now and know, you know, what things look like in 2080, and how much of Trump's behavior reverberates through history, and how much of it we shut down over the next decade. Yeah. I don't know the answer to that, but I think that to the point of the fact that this is a person that does not have any redeemable characteristics, like, that is something that we do know, and that is the thing that to me has been so frustrating throughout this whole period, and is so relieving today to be rid of him, because he's got nothing. Like, for me, there was nothing. There's not a single thing that I would look to my daughter and say, I think I wish that you would take this from Donald Trump. He's a terrible person, but like, he got this one thing right. I wish that you would emulate this. I can't think of one. Right. So that is unique. That is aberrant. And the other thing is, without going back to the 1800s, in the post-World War II era, he is the only one who was outside of this consensus of America being a force for good of the world, America supporting, you know, freedom-loving people everywhere, you know, America welcoming people from who are oppressed all over the world. He is the only one that is outside that, and others have failed to live up to it, but everyone else has at least tried and at least believed that to be true.
So I've said this many times over the last 4 years, and I always worry that I'm going to be misunderstood, that Donald Trump is Donald Trump and therefore doesn't bother me as much because he is who he is, right? He's living the dream. He told us who he was. His character has not changed since he came down the golden escalator. The real horror of the last 4 years is watching how many people believed his lies and went along with it and supported it. The distortion of our political culture, the incredible transformation of the Republican Party into a Vichy Party, all of that, and how much of it is based on absurd lies that Donald Trump was a great businessman, that he was competent. I mean, he was a terrible businessman. I mean, he's the guy. He was a con man. He was a serial liar. He was a fraudster. He was a serial failure with frauds like, you know, Trump University or Trump Airlines. I mean, the long list of all of his businesses. It was always a myth. Or the notion that he was going to drain the swamp. And this is where I want to get. So he
just really quick before draining the swamp, yeah, just one other thing, yeah, while we reflect on that.
Yeah.
Because I tweeted this yesterday and I want to expand on it a little bit because some people are like really confused in my mentions. But I said that Donald Trump was just a hair better than I anticipated in 2016. And that the Republicans in Congress were three ticks worse than I anticipated. We knew who Donald Trump was. Honestly, the only thing that I missed about his character is I knew he was kind of a wimp, but I didn't realize just how much of a coward he was in a way that sort of benefited us, right? He wanted to be loved at this deep level, and I expected him to be more violent. Like, he wanted to pretend to be violent, right? He's a classic bully on the schoolyard who like wants to, you know, make fun of the runt kid in the class, but when one person stands up to him, he cries and cowers. You know, I was deeply concerned that Trump was gonna, you know, inflict violence on protesters. I actually thought that was almost certain. And Lafayette Square was horrible, and you know, will be one of the top five worst things of his administration probably. But I expected it to be much worse than that. Meanwhile, the Republicans in Congress, to you, just exactly what you said. Yeah. I expected at least some of them to try to fight him sometimes. It is just crazy to me that they went along with every single thing, with the exception of Mitt.
Well, and also the Republican base. I mean, sometimes I think the focus on the elected officials misses the point that they are following where the Republican grassroots has gone, and you know, Trump still has a hold over them, and so this invasion of the body snatchers watching normal human beings who suddenly go off into this alternative reality and believe things that are just not true. I mean, look, it ought to make our heads explode that tens of millions of Americans believe that this election was fraught with fraud and dysfunction, when in fact the evidence is not just overwhelming. It is overwhelming, definitive, and gone over 100 times that no, none of this is true. And yet tens of millions of people believe it's true. And it's going to become the stabbed in the back myth that's going to shape our politics for 30 years. This has been a disaster. Okay, but what I was getting to was the other big lies that is that he was going to drain the swamp. One of the things that's extraordinary about those pardons that he dropped in the middle of the night last night was the fact that Donald Trump went out of his way to show clemency to corrupt politicians, to his own personal cronies. Not even Nixon, pardoned his own Watergate cronies. Trump has broken through every single line. The number of crooked, corrupt politicians that he has now pardoned is stunning. His penchant for cruelty and war crimes, the number of people that he also pardoned. But I just want to tee this up. Steve Bannon. Let's just talk about Steve Bannon, because this seems to me like the perfect swampy moment for Donald Trump. The guy comes in with the big lie that he's going to build a wall and Mexico is going to pay for it. Steve Bannon goes out with this incredible grift to get the Trumpian rubes to come up with money to pay for a wall that was non-existent. He gets busted for grifting Trump people, and Trump pardons him. I mean, this kind of closes the circle, doesn't it?
Yeah, you're really trying to pop my joy balloon, Charlie. I'm not going to let you do it. I'm not going to let you do it. Steve Bannon getting a pardon is just horrific. And I mean, the fact that he did it after stealing money from Trump supporters, it's really like you almost don't even know what to say about the fact that Trump supporters were working class people, were robbed of their money by this just three-shirted, disgusting, racist grifter. And Donald Trump sided with him over his own voters. Why should we be surprised? He's been stealing money from them for this fake coup, and he stole money from them from Trump University. And it's just, these guys are thieves. They're robbing people blind, their own supporters, the people that wear the red hats. And, you know, then we've got to get people wave their finger at us and say that we're the ones that are looking down our nose at them. No, fuck that. These guys are the ones that are looking down their nose at that. They think they're rubes, and they're, you know, maybe right. They've stolen all their money and they're still with them. Like, thank you, sir. May I have another?
Yeah, it's all done in broad daylight. This is the thing. Most of what Trump has done has been done in real time, in broad daylight. There's been no secret about it. We've seen it, all of this stuff.
Yeah.
And here we are. Okay, so
I just want to say, though, as bad as that was, the Paul Manafort, which I wrote about,
much
pardon, is the worst pardon by far. I mean, there were like 20 Mark Rich. I don't ever want to hear about Mark Rich again. There were like 20 Mark Rich pardons last night. You know, people who aren't even going to get named because there are so many bad pardons. But the Elliot Broidy and all these others. But the Paul Manafort pardon. And Paul Manafort we throw this word around, was literally acting as a traitor against America. I mean, he had sided with the Russians because he owed them money. He was an asset to the Russians. He lied to the government about their investigation into it. And he did it all to protect Donald Trump. Donald Trump paid him off. Like you said about Nixon, there's no analog. I think that it's important when you encapsulate all these horrible pardons that, yes, it was swampy, but also it was traitorous.
Yeah, and of course, we're going to figure on Fox News, we're going to get a lot about what about Mark Rich? What about Mark Rich? Yeah. You're right. This is like Mark Rich times 1,000 for all of these reasons. Also, including the fact that most of these people express no contrition whatsoever. Look, the Mueller investigation, I think, was a disappointment to a lot of folks. But we're going to be reading, particularly on the pro-Trump and the anti-Trump right about the Russia hoax, which is, by the way, bullshit, because the Russia story was not a hoax. There were so many contacts, so many lies. And I think the one thing that we got to keep reminding ourselves of is that the second half of the Mueller report detailed, documented in great detail the obstruction of justice, which was successful.
Yes.
Donald Trump successfully obstructed justice. The reason we don't have the whole truth is because he dangled pardons to sleazeballs like Roger Stone and Paul Manafort and others to get them not to cooperate. And it worked. And he fulfilled his end of the bargain. It's all right there. You know, wink, wink, nod, nod. You don't tell what you know to these prosecutors and I will pardon you. And then he does. There is no analog in American history. In fact, this is exactly what the founding fathers actually debated. George Mason, you know, at one point stood up during the ratification of the Constitution and said, you know, this is really dangerous because you could have somebody who, you know, might abuse the power in this particular way. And James Madison said, hey, nothing to worry here, because if a president ever did that, if the president ever tried to, you know, promise pardons or pardon his own cronies, his own partners in crime, well, the House could always impeach him and remove him. You know, Tim, you notice the flaw there?
Your biggest flaw is that he should have been impeached for that too, and he wasn't. So he should have had at least three impeachments. We could probably go down the list and come up with some others. But he matched the total number of impeachments of all the other presidents in our history, and it was an undercount of what was deserved.
Okay, as a slight digression, my favorite scene from Donald Trump's last day in office.
Yeah,
the limousine waiting for Joe Exotic. Do you know this story? This one, I go off on little tangents here. You know, I have a thing, by the way, I will read every single story about the deep cleaning of the White House. I wanted to think about it as Donald Trump was walking out of the White House, you could see some of the housekeeping crew, you know, going down that colonnade, and they were going into the Oval Office, and they had these things like, you know, it's like, before his foot touched the stairway, they were stripping his bed.
Yeah, somebody wrote this article about how, like, well, actually, you know, the coronavirus doesn't really live on surfaces for that long, so there's no need to do this. And I was like, I don't give a shit about that. I get the hazmat suits in there. I was like, if there was ever a super coronavirus bug that does live on a desk, it would be on that desk. I mean, they didn't follow a single guideline. Who the hell knows what else they were doing in there? His Big Macs. I mean, if I was the Bidens, I would be sleeping next door.
I'm surprised they didn't have one of those big blue tents over the White House.
Yeah. Breaking Bad.
Okay, so back to Joe Exotic. Okay, this is the Tiger King star, and he's serving a prison term. And he was so confident that Donald Trump was going to be pardoning him because, of course, he's on television and he's a celebrity and a total sleazeball. So he figured he was perfect, right? And so he was so confident that they actually rented this huge, obnoxious limousine and parked it outside the prison. So that the moment that Donald Trump pardoned Joe Exotic could come out, you know, do the fist bump and get in the big freaking limousine. And he wasn't on the list.
It's just
Joe Exotic was left off the 73 pardons.
You know how it's just, you have these little moments that break in to this, you know, emotional and powerful and important transition of power where you're still just like, how is this our life?
Yeah,
so like
exactly.
Joe Exotic in the limo and, you know,
sort of
little Weezy.
Of all Trump world. Do you see this, though? It's like they're all waiting. They're all waiting for, you know, American greatness. And he doesn't deliver. It's just, it's so pathetic. There's poor, you know. Joe Exotic still sitting in that cell, and the limo's gone. Kind of like, so. Well, by the way, what is the line from QAnon? Are they still waiting for something to happen at noon, or have they moved the goalposts?
I'm praying.
Will it be 2 o'clock?
I'm praying that there's not any one-off things. So I've been doing some reading about this. I think that the organized groups, right, the militias, are smart enough to know that today is not the day to do anything. You know, they've got DC on lock. They've seen a lot of their comrades in arms get arrested over the past 2 weeks. So there's not going to be any actions there. But then once you go down a layer to the message board kind of crowd, you know, it's out there. It's all over the place. There's infighting. One of my friends who you know, sort of went deep cover into Parler, you know, followed one of them into their group chats and like shared with me a group chat in case I wanted to write about it. It's kind of too nonsensical to sort of to even write about real to write a full article on, but there's tension in this group chat about like, you know, whether are we waiting, you know what I mean? Is the big action to come still, you know, are we going back to fight? Should we leave and start the Patriot Party? You know, I do think that there's dissension in the ranks about what exactly to do. And, you know, some people who are frustrated, who are like my, you know, I saw one message that was really, frankly, sad from a guy who was like, my family all thinks I'm crazy. Like, when is it going to be proven that I'm right? And it's just like, it's not, you know, it's not going to happen for these people who've been, you know, sort of lied to and scammed. So I don't know, you know, I mean, David Frum, I think it was on this podcast, actually. He did some research into scams, and he's like, you know, scam people who get scammed cling on to it till the very last second. Right? The last thing they want to learn is that they've been scammed. So there's always something else. There's always another out. So I think that it kind of remains to be seen. And some of them, I think, will fall different ways. Hopefully, some of them will be cleaved off enough that we can bring back some reality. I'm not that hopeful about that.
I would hope so, but I saw something online on twitter.com, which is of course very reliable. Somebody was actually doing, one of these QAnon folks was doing a survey. I actually don't know where the site was. I saw it on Twitter, asking people, what do you think is going to happen? And of course, there's a portion of them who actually believe that that Biden would not be sworn in at noon today, that something would happen. But the largest, the plurality, I think, was like 33% actually believed, okay, Biden is going to be sworn in at noon today, but Trump and the military have plans in the very near future. So it's just, if you bought into the life of being deluded, then there's always something else for you. Okay, so you mentioned the Patriot Party. I don't give a lot of credence to this story. I mean, I'm not saying the story's wrong, but the Wall Street Journal says that the president has been musing about starting his own party, the Patriot Party, because he's so pissed off at Republicans for not standing up. He's furious at Mitch McConnell. He's furious at Kevin McCarthy. So he's going, we should start our own party. I'm guessing he's just venting, and that's the kind of shit he just throws up against the wall. I'm okay with that. I'm seriously okay. That would be kind of the perfect ending to this.
Area. We're not have these kind of nice things, right, Charlie? Again, it's an example of the bottom up. So I got this text. That's why it sort of caught me off guard yesterday when that journal story happened, because I've been monitoring this Patriot Party text group for a couple of weeks now. And so, you know, it seems like that's too big of a coincidence. And that this stuff, again, like when he was on Twitter, you know, is bubbling up from these far right extremist groups. And then, you know, he sort of picks the stuff he likes, or Dan Scavino does, or Don Jr. does, and shares it with them. So, I mean, there's something to it. He's not the kind of guy that is successful at, you know, actually building and creating things. I know right. That's contrary to his brand, but that's not what he's good at. He's good at putting his name on other things. Which is why he succeeded in the Republican Party takeover. So I don't really see it happening, but you know, there's the "let them fight" meme that goes around. I mean, fighting is good. You know, internal fighting is good because it weakens. It weakens all of them. You know, the Trump will be the strongest if the party just decides, screw it. You know, let's delay the recriminations. Let's memory hole all this. You know, let's focus on fighting Joe Biden, and then hopefully Trump just goes away. Wink, wink. We'll just cross our fingers, and then in 2 years from now, a primary starts. That's the best case scenario for Donald Trump, right? He'll have time to regroup, and he'll be the most famous person in that primary. Recriminations are good because that will potentially weaken him. It will weaken the party overall, and it will speed the cleansing that is required. So hopefully, even if it's not a party, you know, him doing the Sarah Palin thing, getting involved in primaries, and actually doing it in a real way rather than just like whatever posting on, you know, MAGA Twitter that he creates or whatever, is the best case scenario.
I'm thinking that people are he's going to be shocked by how quickly he's diminished by this. I mean, one of the most extraordinary stories, and I haven't checked the latest development on all of this, but does he even have a defense team for the Senate trial? And think through the implications of being the president of the United States as of right now and not having anyone that you can really tap to defend you in front of the Senate. Is he got anybody?
As of right now, no. I mean, they're still scrambling for that.
Janet
Ellis said she won't do it. I mean, I'm sure Dersh will end up doing it or something, but it is crazy. It is crazy.
No, it is. Okay, so Ben Collins from NBC, who follows this sort of thing since we were talking about this, that QAnon, he says, this is a tweet, QAnon is not the broader pro-Trump internet, but the broader pro-Trump internet is hedging today. They are simultaneously making fun of QAnon supporters while hedging, hoping that the mass executions are coming. One top post starts with, no matter what happens today. So it's a strange world out there, but there's going to be a lot of tears, a lot of disappointment.
Yeah, hopefully there's not just a one-off actor. That's just what I'm hoping for, Charlie, because there will be disappointment. Hopefully there's not a one-off crazy person, and we can get through this because, there's going to be a lot of tears today because those assholes will have tears, but, Biden is going to have some tears, some well-deserved tears from somebody that...
random thought here. I'm looking at a picture here of what they've done with the mall with those flags and everything. That's pretty amazing that they pulled that off. That's all paid for by the inaugural committee, right?
Yeah, and it's truly beautiful. It's quite beautiful what they've done. And they made fun, some people were trying to make fun of David Chalian, who was on CNN, for talking about the scene. And I just, to me, this is, we get off here, I'm going to go watch it. This is the moment for letting kind of those sort of patriotic feelings just well up because the way that they've set it up in spite of this virus is beautiful. It will be a reminder of the pain that everybody's going through while also being, this sort of hopeful look forward. And I've said this before, but Joe Biden, we did not have to have, this was not preordained.
This was not inevitable.
No,
this is an important point.
And Joe Biden has gone through so much in his life and, to lose multiple kids and a wife, and he could have just lobbied and given big speeches, and done what a lot of other, sort of ex-Republicans, frankly, have done, who knew Donald Trump's threat, but would rather, smoke cigars and lobby than do anything about it. He could have just stayed on the sidelines. And he didn't, and it's been painful for him, and it's been hard. And this is just such a good, and we needed him. We needed him.
We very much
would have happened otherwise.
Yeah, that was. I was actually on the Peacock Network right after that ceremony last night, and my first reaction was, boy, we really needed that. The country really needed that. Okay, so here's an interesting breaking news story.
Okay,
that's pretty cool. Eugene Goodman, the Capitol police officer who led rioters away from the Senate chambers, will escort Kamala Harris at the inauguration as the new acting deputy House Sergeant at Arms. That's interesting.
That's just so great. Cool.
That is a great moment.
Just between him and Navalny, and we're having these moments. I do feel, I know that other people felt this way, like there were times during this time where I was like, is there anybody who is up to the moment? We definitely felt for a while, I think, that we had a dearth of heroes at this time in this country. That's great to hear that of Goodman, and that's getting me a little bit verklempt again because
it's a good story.
He was in it. I think that still, and this benefits some people to pretend like this isn't true, so that we'll go on pretending it. But we were on the knife's edge from having dead members of Congress, knife's edge, and Goodman is one of the reasons that we didn't.
Well, I know that a lot of folks, and I think this would include you, Tim, who wanted an immediate snap trial in the Senate, and I agree. I mean, I think that they should have moved to remove Donald Trump. But it is interesting that as time goes on, we are getting a clearer picture, and the evidence is coming in. The evidence is so overwhelming, and I think we know how history is going to look at that, and they will look at that as really being on the knife's edge, and so many things were on the knife's edge right then. So let's go watch this. Let's go watch An Extraordinary Day, something that has been a long time coming. Donald Trump is gone. Donald Trump is in exile. We are about to have the swearing in of a new president and vice president of the United States. It'll be a very, very different swearing in ceremony. I mean, a very different inauguration because of the circumstances than we've seen before. But it's going to be as significant a transition as we've experienced in decades.
Certainly in my life. So thank you, Charlie. It's just been so good to do this with you. I'm so glad we were able to unite on this, and to all the Bulwark folks. And we got the live stream tonight. I hope that I'm able to keep it together for folks on the Bulwark Plus live stream. I'm so grateful for everybody.
We will be having a special live stream, Bulwark Plus exclusive live stream tonight at 9 o'clock Eastern time. You are all invited if you're members of Bulwark Plus. If you're not a member of Bulwark Plus, you can sign up today. I'm Charlie Sykes. Thank you so much for listening to today's Bulwark podcast on an extraordinary transformational day in American history. And there's no hype to that sentence. We will be back tomorrow, and we will do this all over again.